This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.
Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome again to Screen Talk. This is going to be a great show. I can just feel it. We've got Doug Naylor, who is the writer and creator of Red Dwarf, which is currently on Dave at the moment. We're going to have a great chat. I can just feel it. I was a huge fan of this show when I was a kid, so it means a lot that he's come in to talk to us. And of course, we've got James Gill to talk about our news in the film and TV world. But first, before I talk to James, here is a song from a film, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? This is the brilliant I Am a Man of Constant Sorrow.
Sleeping in his grave.
beautiful song that is. Are you a fan of the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou film or soundtrack, James?
I quite like the film, and I love the main song.
Yeah, which that was it. That was it.
Awesome. I wish I'd been listening because I love that song.
James Gill, everyone here, to give us some news and reviews. And I just want to start, James. Like, you and I have, we've been a little bit down the last couple of shows on the whole movie business and film business. And we are going to try and be positive today. But let's start at a sort of 5 and work our way up to a 10 of positivity.
I like it, like a warm-up guy.
Yeah, a little bit, and you know all about
that. Which is something I do.
Very good at it, too. If anyone's looking for warm-up acts, James is your man. Now, I saw 2 films last weekend.
Okay.
Both the number 5 out of 10 feels very, very apt to me. I think you're going to be surprised that I felt this way about one of them.
I can't wait.
It was Deepwater Horizon.
God, that absolutely blew my socks off
with
that movie.
Yeah.
I'd give that 5 stars out of 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It just... I don't think it's bad. I don't like saying negative things about films because I know how much hard work goes into them, but I don't know. I think there was all the technical jargon at the beginning, and it felt like to me.
Well, I think that was deliberate because this was my take on it.
Yeah.
What they're saying there is this started like any other day at work. And so the reason why there's all that technical jargon is because they're inviting us into the world of working on an oil rig, and therefore that is a very jargon heavy job. So you're watching that thinking, I mean, it almost feels like a documentary, doesn't it? It feels like you are on the rig. So I just think they were going for that extra authenticity. So I was absolutely sucked in.
Okay, I get that. But to me, it felt like, what a coincidence. The day that they're all really banging on about checking the cement is the day that it all goes tits up. Like, I couldn't work out whether it was heavy-handed exposition or... But then, and also, I was like, it's a bit of a coincidence that he wins an award on the day that the thing, you know, Kurt Russell's character wins an award for the best safety man, and then it explodes that day. That actually happened.
Oh,
so I watched an interview with Kurt, actually happened. He won an award that day, and it happened. So I thought, okay, maybe this film was much more authentic, but I just didn't. I don't know. It was okay. I liked it. I just didn't. I wanted to love it so much more. It kind of reminded me of Captain Phillips, which I thought was amazing.
Oh my God.
But wasn't
underrated.
Wasn't quite as. I don't know. I just didn't. Just wanted to like it more. And then another one was the other film I saw was The Girl with All the Gifts, which the first half is amazing, and then the second half turns into any other zombie film.
Sure.
Which, without going into it, because I think there was some really beautiful like cinematography and design and makeup and performances are great, and the concept early on is great, but I don't know if you feel the same way, but something happens when people try and subvert a genre where at the first half or first third it's really clever and different, and then it somehow ends up becoming like every other film that it's trying to subvert. Have you noticed that?
I think that's a very fair shout. So there's Funny People springs to mind. That starts out as a movie about stand-up comedy, and you think, wow, this is really interesting. And then it tries to flip it and goes full rom-com for the second half, and then just becomes any other rom-com.
Yeah.
And then the big example, I suppose, is Dusk Till Dawn, which starts off as the heist movie, and you think, wow, this is an exciting heist movie, and then goes full vampire.
Yeah. Which was part of the point, that it was meant to be such a weird change and surprise, which is cool, I guess. But
you're right.
I thought the first Kick-Ass, I was like, the first half, I was like, this is amazing. This is so funny
fresh.
And original and fresh.
Yeah.
And then it became a sort of superhero movie.
And like with the big shootout at the end.
So is that just because a film needs to be 3 acts and tied up and
probably.
It's just that's what happens? I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
But if you do like zombie films and horror films and films with sort of a bit of a take, I do recommend The Girl with All the Gifts. It's just...
Adaptation does that, doesn't it? But then they do it deliberately.
I think
it's like
they do,
knowingly done.
It so becomes a like weird... is it a sort of... What happens at the end? I'm trying to remember now.
So he actually does meet the screenwriting expert, doesn't he? And the tips that he gives him, played by Brian Cox, he actually ends up, despite him thinking that he's a hack, he actually adheres to those rules. Yeah. So there does end up being a car chase.
But they don't say it in the film that that's what he's done. But
that's
because
right.
we know the film is credited as the two brothers that are in the film.
And one's
well.
A fictional brother yeah. and one's a...
I mean,
that's a hell of a movie.
There you go.
So that's a movie like that, though. When the credits rolled, I remember thinking, that is a classic. Never seen it since.
Yeah. No. It hasn't sort of held up in the lists of people's no. favourite films and stuff. Cage, who divides opinion, amazing in it. So tell me some news. What's new? I think I know what you're going to talk about.
Well, let's go uber positive.
Yeah.
And so for all our talk of, hey, there aren't any reboots or remakes that are super awesome. And then what was on this week? Westworld. Sweet Nelly Furtado. If that didn't... hit me for six. It is joyous. So it is a reboot.
Which is a reboot and a remake.
And it's based on a book. And so what they've done is there is a little doff of the Stetson to the original, because someone says something like that. There hasn't been an incident for more than 30 years, which may be a reference to what happened at the old Westworld with Yul Brynner. But please watch it. So the first episode is nearly an hour and a half long. And yes, a lot of it is setting the scene for what's coming up. But the cast, James Marsden, who I know I have a long list of underrated actors, but Handsome James would be on that list, is wonderful. Ed Harris is fantastic. In the I don't think I'm spoiling anything. In the trailer, it looked like he was very much playing the Yul Brynner part.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's not. I don't want to spoil anything.
I don't want any spoilers because I'm actually really looking forward to this.
Okay, well, in the original, I can say this. In the original, yeah. the humans were the good guys and the robots were the baddies because they turned bad. Whereas in this, and obviously I know that HBO and Sky will be hoping this runs for many, many seasons. Yeah. I mean, this is already...
They've pumped so much money.
No pressure. They're yeah. already saying this is the new Game of Thrones, so they're probably thinking 7, 8, 9 seasons, I yeah. guess. So it's not spoiling anything if I say that not everyone will appear as they seem, I guess.
Okay.
But in terms of whetting the appetite, I mean, I was... Again, practically.
I'd love it if you said
soap.
Everyone appears to as what they seem.
That would be a twist. That would be a twist. If someone started yeah. out looking like a baddie
yeah.
and they turn out to be a baddie, you'd be like, yeah. "Whoa, I wasn't
old
seeing
school.
That." Yeah,
yeah,
I like it. Old school.
This is an example of why where we're at. This is such a crystallized example of where we're at with film and TV. That something not just on this scope. That looks as beautiful. I mean, I'm saying this, I haven't watched the first episode
it
yet.
It does look beautiful.
It looks beautiful. It looks in so much production design and quality. And
the cast is ridiculous. I mean, Anthony Hopkins, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Ed Harris, Anthony Hopkins, James Marsden, that is something that would have, just that cast alone would have made X amount of money 10 years ago because
yep.
people would have just gone and see it because of those. I mean, it really is. But then how do you keep up with that sort of level of television, the people that don't have HBO's money? I mean, that's quite... They're setting the bar really fucking high.
They're setting it preposterously high. However, I would say that stations such as... Station? I want to go with station.
Radio station.
Radio station. You're watching BBC One. Stations such as... BBC One, I mean, Happy Valley is one of the best... TV shows of recent years. So yeah. you don't I'm going to do finger quotes, which is great on a podcast. You don't have to have Sky because BBC and ITV and Channel 4, they are pumping out great yeah. shows.
And we all know that really it comes down to script and storytelling.
Well, I mean, you know as well, you know better than I do, the planets really have to align, don't they, in order for a show to be quality. You know, the writing's got to be great, the acting's got to be great, the director's got to be great. A lot of things have to go right.
You know, there are some times when the actors are great, the director's great, the script's great, and it still doesn't end up. And there is a horrible truth to alchemy, which is sometimes... like you said, the planets don't align. Like, all the people can be good. Now, that's a minority when that happens.
No,
I've
interviewed actors, and they've said that they made a movie, they had a wonderful time, everyone got on well, everyone's got the good feeling in
yeah.
their gut, oh, this is going to be a cracker, and they go to the premiere, oh my God.
Yeah.
And then there are examples of people having the worst time of their lives making a film, like, well, this is a hunk of junk,
yeah.
and then the critics see
yeah.
it, and it's 5 stars across the board. So the golden rule is there probably is no golden rule. But with Westworld, yes, there is a lot of pressure on it, in so much as that it is already being tipped to be the new
yeah,
huge,
big
huge show. I mean, the people behind it, obviously, J.J. Abrams...
Who?
some young up and comer. He does feel like he produces every TV show ever getting made. But I suppose the key name that jumps out is Jonathan Nolan, mm-hmm. who has been working with his brother on a number of projects, whereas now he's... It's Jonah's time to shine,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. So you asked me about this, and I said, well, I don't have Sky. The other day you were like, are you going to watch it? And I said, well, I don't have Sky. And you said when you came in, would this make you get Sky? And not this alone, but this and The Night Of. It's like, well, God, these are... Because Sky have this weird deal. I don't know what the deal is, but you can't get them on any other platform.
Sure.
Unless you do it illegally, which I don't
condone. No way, listeners.
No way.
No way. The thing times where I've said to you, have you seen such and such? And you texted back, how have you seen that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think I imagined it. I honestly don't. I've never done the torrenting thing And I really want to see these shows. But so Sky don't allow their shows on iTunes or Amazon or Netflix or anything. So the only two ways you can watch it is if you've got Sky or if you buy a DVD, which I think is released sometime after the show's gone out. So there have been a couple of... Like, there hasn't been enough to make me want to subscribe to it.
But this has been quite a rich vein of form.
Yeah, well, The Night Of and Westworld are two... And probably the two big shows that everyone talks about.
The big
one, too. Yeah.
And something they've been putting a lot of their energy, and by energy I mean money, behind is this whole box sets thing. So,
yeah.
So even if you don't like The Night Of or Westworld, they're going to wallop you with, you know, X seasons of The Sopranos or Mad Men. So I'm not employed by Sky, so I can speak quite independently. I would say that it is an incredible service. I would also say, I mean, it is insanely expensive. A mate of mine was making the point that if you have the movies and the sport and everything else, you're looking at around £100 a month.
I think. Really?
Yes. And as my friend said, if someone said to you that watching telly would cost you more than a grand a year, you'd laugh in... I mean...
And people complain about the BBC licence
fee. I know.
Which isn't... Oh, my God. Well, I...
That's so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like Louis Theroux the other day banging out that Jimmy Savile documentary, which was...
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredibly complicated stuff. It was a really beautiful piece of work that he put together. But you know, they're banging that out free. Happy Valley's another one, but you're always going to get someone, the licence is a disgrace.
Yeah, I know. And when you think about the amount of channels that there are, radio stations, the news, the...
I mean, iPlayer is a great thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. This segues us into even more positivity, which is films I'm looking forward to that are coming out.
Because, yes, lovely.
You mentioned Louis Theroux there. His feature length, this is the first time he's done something that isn't on the television, it will be a film release, is the Scientology documentary, which...
Have you seen it yet?
No, but I can't wait to see it.
I will make that my homework to try set up and you going to a screening of that.
Oh,
how's
our
that?
First date movie is an anti-Scientology film. I'm assuming it's anti.
Can you imagine that? That'll be a twist.
That'll be the twist.
By then, Louis signing up.
Yeah, Theroux is actually like really trying to get us to get on board. Wow.
I came to the conclusion that it's really interesting and great.
And it's helped me. If I had been into Scientology earlier, I think I would have spotted what Savile was up to. But that'll be interesting to see how that actually does, like, business-wise. Does Louis Theroux have a an audience that are willing to go out and pay?
I mean, that will be interesting, actually, because the guy who questioned me has quite rightly has a following. Yeah. But will he have a following who are prepared to part with 10 sheets?
Part with 10 sheets instead of their 100 a month at Sky. So some of the films. Have you got any films that you're particularly looking forward to?
Yes. So there's a film coming up at the start of November, if we're talking about upcoming movies.
Yeah.
But now this might sound like the sort of thing that Alan Partridge might pitch Tony Ayres. Ben Affleck is an accountant who's really good at killing people, and you'd be like, no, Alan. But that is what The Accountant is all about, and it's a real pleasant surprise.
Have you seen it?
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot like, well, it's a bit like The Equalizer, the excellent Denzel Washington movie,
mm-hmm.
but with really complicated maths. So
my favorite kind of movie.
Something for everyone.
Yeah.
So Affleck.
And Affleck's done well with complicated maths in the past.
I think there's a nice little...
It launches his whole career.
I think there's a nice little nod to Good Will Hunting in this movie. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And it's directed by Gavin Hood, so it will do... I think it will do good business, and I tell you who's glorious in it is J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, well, he's always good, isn't
he? You would queue in the rain.
Tambor's in it, isn't he? Jeffrey Tambor?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah.
It's not the biggest role.
Okay.
But what a career that guy's had.
I know, amazing.
So, listener, I think you will really enjoy that movie.
I really like The Warrior. Is it called Warrior?
Yes.
The Warrior.
Yes, Warrior. With
Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton. And that was directed by Gavin Hood, right?
The wrong ending, that movie.
Okay.
I would have gone the other way.
Did we have options? I didn't know that.
That is the future, my friend.
It is.
Choose your ending.
Choose your ending.
Well,
like
I would
books.
Have gone with... If you've watched that film, you'll know what I'm talking about. They could have gone one of two ways, and they went one way. I would have definitely gone the...
Really?
100%.
Yeah. Don't do that finger pointing saying I would have gone the other way.
I'd have gone that way, pointing right, and then the other way.
I enjoyed that film. It was everything on paper about Warrior, or The Warrior, whatever it was called. You go, really? Hasn't this film like been done a million times or something? But there was something about it that was so...
And there's some lovely performances in that film.
These are the films I'm looking forward to. La La Land. Which
yes, I'm looking forward to that.
Everyone is raving about. It's the follow-up to the guy who wrote and directed Whiplash, which is a controversial film, I think. It's a film that splits a lot of people, Whiplash. Bleed for This, which is... There's a link.
I've seen that.
Have you seen that?
I have,
is that
yeah.
good?
It's excellent.
Is it?
And I tell you who's outstanding in that.
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons. No, Aaron Eckhart.
Yes.
So there's
he
a
looks amazing.
So Aaron Eckhart is one of those guys who, you know, you watch him in something like The Dark Knight and you think, wow, Aaron Eckhart, what I'd give for that lantern jaw.
Yeah.
And then you see him do movies and you think, what are you doing, Aaron? You're so much better than this.
Yeah.
And so he's done quite a few films that have either not been brilliant or have gone straight... I feel awful saying this because I'm a positive guy. I don't want to sound like I'm being critical of Aaron Eckhart, but that is a fact. He's made a couple of movies that have done straight to DVD and you think, no, Aaron, you're better than this.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, he's playing against type. And maybe this is why I like him, because he's playing a bald man. But he's,
you relate to
he's
it.
He's playing a guy who is seemingly washed up and past his best, and then he sees something in the Miles... Now, this sounds cliche, but it's not. It's a really good movie. He sees something in the Miles Teller character, and it's a true story. Teller plays a boxer who is involved in a horrendous car crash, and he's told that he... There's a line, it's something like, will I ever fight again? And the doctor says, you might never walk again. And it's all about, can he walk again and can he train again? And I won't say much more.
Yeah.
But it's
we get it, though.
Pretty fantastic.
Baron
Eckhart in that movie. I will say this now. I would be very surprised if he isn't nominated for best supporting.
There's our first
best
bet.
Supporting actor.
Cool.
I'm not saying he'll win, but he might.
I loved him in. Aaron Brockovich, Aaron
yes,
Eckhart,
of course,
as the biker. I'm also looking forward to Manchester by the Sea, which everyone's saying is amazing. It's Kenneth Lonergan.
Now, he's an early runner. Casey Affleck
is
one of the favourites for best actor.
Yeah.
So I'd just like to correct myself. It's actually Gavin O'Connor who directed The Accountant.
Yes, there is a Gavin Hood, but it's
there
Gavin,
is a Gavin Hood.
Manchester by the Sea is the follow-up. Well, not the follow-up. There was a film before, but we won't count that because it went through so many bizarre troubles.
That's right.
Margaret. But it was the film You Can Count on Me, which was a beautiful little film that brought Mark Ruffalo to the world. And
What a gift.
But I bet
you're like me. I bet you bloody love Casey Affleck.
I love him.
He's so talented.
He's so good. And I love that he likes playing it a little bit more low profile. I'm a fan of Ben Affleck, especially as a director. And I think, and I liked some of his early sort of Kevin Smith films and stuff. But
The Assassination of Jesse James.
I love
Casey Affleck.
I think Casey is, there's something really...
Something special about
special.
Him.
Yeah.
He's got that special something.
I'm now going to just have to rattle these off because we're running out of time. But Nocturnal Animals, I've heard, is good.
Right.
The Tom Ford film.
Yeah, that's supposed to be good.
Arrival. I'm very excited about that.
Mr. Renner.
Yeah.
Yes.
Live by Night of Ben Affleck's next
One
film.
Of my favourite authors, Dennis Lehane. I've read.
Dennis Lehane.
Yeah, strongly recommend those books. They're wonderful.
Yeah. In fact, every book he's... every film he's direct... No, not Argo. But all his other films are based
on Dennis Lehane related.
The Founder, which is the Michael Keaton film about
McDonald's,
McDonald's guy. And, of course, going a bit more mainstream because that's been a very indie list, Rogue One. So that is not a bad little
list. That's a happy list of movies.
That's me going, okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
Between now and Christmas is going to be good, film-wise, I think.
You've got me popcorn. I'm back. Do you go popcorn or nachos?
Never nachos. Are you insane?
100% nachos.
What?
Yes.
We are not going to see that Scientology duck together. I cannot eat.
Like, the lovely girl at Odeon, or another cinema, but the lovely girl at my local Odeon will go salsa or cheese, and I will go both. And she will go, Gil, you crazy son of a gun.
How does she know your surname?
I go a lot.
Yeah.
Pretty regular.
And say, hi, James Gil here. I'd like to order one ticket to see. Adam, my producer, I'm afraid we're running over, but I do want to just quickly talk about this. James lives in the area that I was born and grew up. I was born and then lived there till I was 18 in the same house. And then I left and I've almost never returned. And he just talked about his local Odeon, and I suddenly pictured the cinema that I went to all my childhood and teens. How is that cinema? It used to be the ABC in Beckenham, but...
A couple of the screens could be bigger.
Yeah.
I've paid top dollar to see a blockbuster and seen it on a screen that's the size of... I don't want to get sued by Odeon, but a bit bigger than an average television. And I thought, okay.
Seats comfy or not? Are they
seats
still
comfy.
Old 70s?
No, the seats might be new.
Yeah.
Screen one's nice.
Screen one?
Screen one's good.
Screen one is where I saw and experienced the best cinema experience of my life, bar the time I first ever snogged a girl, which was also in that cinema.
There's a blue plaque.
There is. Screen one is where I saw Rocky IV, and the entire audience, and I'm not exaggerating, well, all right, maybe I'm
cannot
exaggerating.
Wait, yeah.
80%
tell
at
me.
Least.
Standing
up. Standing up,
yep.
Shouting, Rocky, yeah. Rocky. Now, when has that ever happened
I've
since?
Never, because you hear an actor or director, and we knew, we attended a screening, and it got a standing ovation, and yeah. I always think, bollocks,
yeah.
Right? Because you and me, we've been to the cinema quite literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. I've never, you tell that story, I've never ever witnessed anything like it. People have talked in the cinema, oh yes.
Oh yeah.
But I've never had people standing up and cheering or anything like that.
And chanting, Rocky, Rocky. Like he was there, like he could
I'm
hear
so
us.
I'm so jealous that you've experienced that.
So good. James,
And I was doing some thinking. Darabrabsky, Sravarabsky. And if you can change, maybe
yeah.
I can change. What a film.
I know. And all us kids were like, yeah, maybe I could have a Russian friend.
Controversial spanner in the works. Best Rocky movie of all time.
So you're not going to say the first Rocky, are you?
No. You ready?
Yeah.
Creed.
Okay, no, not that. I think, technically...
That makes my balls tingle, that film.
I wish they... Sorry, Adam, you're going to have to do some serious editing, but I wish they had not done... He hadn't done the last Rocky Balboa.
The last Rocky Balboa is really good.
It's all right,
Rocky V's not great.
But what would have been amazing was that Creed came from nowhere, like 30 years after Rocky V.
Yeah.
And we hadn't seen that character for that long.
You, yeah.
And the film was as good as Creed was, and Rocky Balboa hadn't happened.
Sure.
I just think that would have blown people's minds.
That would have been blown people's minds. Sylvester, if you're listening, build that time machine.
I love
There's
Sly.
A lot of love for Sly. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I love him so much. And I know someone that works in Hollywood and says he is...
Please be nice.
Very,
please be nice. Please
very,
be nice.
Very, very loved.
Yes.
Anyway, look, we've got to wrap the show up.
God, that was good fun, though.
I've got Doug Naylor, the writer, co-creator, and captain of Red Dwarf, an absolutely brilliant comedy that is back and is doing really well again. He's coming up right now.
Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Doug Naylor, the legend, the enigma.
Legend's good. Just stick with legend.
Just stick with legend, yeah. I was going to say something about comedy establishment, but that sounds a bit stuffy and not at all sort of rock and roll, does
and
it?
I'd fight you if you ever accuse us of being comedy establishment. We've never been comedy establishment.
The fact that you would want to fight me proves that you're still punk. Thanks for joining us, by the way. I was so excited when I heard that we might be able to get you on the show. I am, and you probably hate someone my age saying this, but I grew up on your show, and it was a huge inspiration and influence on me. We're talking, of course, about Red Dwarf. And can you believe, this is my first proper question to you, Doug.
Okay.
Can you believe that the show has run for as long? I mean, let me word it this way. In the late 80s,
yes,
if someone had said your show will be airing in 2016, would you believe that?
No, you would have thought they were on drugs. I thought it was going to be a hit, to be honest.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. I was very confident it was going to be a hit. But then I'm mad, and I was very confident. I didn't think there was anything like it. This is before anything's made.
Mm-hmm.
This is just based on the script. And I was thinking, actually, come in here, why was I so confident? And Alan Rickman had read the script, and he said it was the best script he'd read that year. It was like January the 2nd.
And no, was Alan a name back then?
Yeah, and Alan wanted to do it. Fred Molina wanted to do it. So we had some really heavyweight
names.
And so you thought, well, if these guys, you know, like it must, Rob and I, we're right. It's a really good script. But we were expecting it to look kind of like Star Wars rather than how it looked.
Yeah.
With all the grey wood and the, everything being quite cheap.
Wouldn't you say that was part of its charm in the early days?
Well, if to answer the question of did I think it was going to be a success, I thought it was going to be a success because all these guys said that we really like the script, and I thought it was going to look like Star Wars. So that the defense rests.
Yeah, there you go. Your perception of things may have been a little bit.
And then when you actually got there, obviously it wasn't like that.
But it was a hit. But was it a hit off the bat?
Yeah, it was a hit. It was a hit off the bat.
Was it? It
5 million for the first show.
Oh, my God.
But then it went down. Because people...
It was a hit and then a failure.
People wanted a science fiction comedy show, but then they saw it and they went, well, we don't want this one.
Oh.
And it slowly went down, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the 6 shows. And then we asked them, would be unheard of now, we asked them not to repeat it. And just to commission show the series 2. And there was a story that Michael Grade, who was at the time head of BBC Two, hope this story's true, and was moving over to Channel 4, and we shared the same agent with him. And our agent said, listen, before you go, do me a favour, will you commission a second series of Red Dwarf? It's no skin off your nose, because you're off to Channel 4 anyway. And he went, yeah, fine. And supposedly he commissioned it. So,
do you know what? I sort of hate you because it is so hard to get stuff made. As I know you know, but you hear all these stories of what it was like in the 70s and 80s when people made gut sort of instinct.
Yes.
Decisions.
Yes.
Like you'd have heads of comedy or heads of channels that were like, fuck it, let's try it. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. People took chances.
And, you know, I know why they don't anymore because there's so much at stake and so it's so competitive. But you just wish there were people that were a bit more.
It was done, I think, with much broader strokes of, hey, we think you're funny. We like you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, what have you got for me? Go.
Yeah.
You know, I need another hit series. That's what the head of comedy would say. But that's what Bill Cotton used to say. Go walk down the corridors of the BBC back in the day. And it was Perry and Croft, what have you got for me? I need another hit.
Yeah.
And they would go, okay, boom, and then they come up with another one.
Wow.
So it was done in a completely different way. Now, that Michael Grade story, I have no idea whether it's true. I hope it's true.
I hope it's true.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, the thing that is true, because you wouldn't misremember this or say this, is that the ratings dipped each week. That must have been such a stressful 6 weeks of your life, the day after the show, finding out it had gone down.
Yeah, yes, it was, but... there were no good reviews either.
Really?
All the reviews were terrible. This is just terrible. It's not funny. It's not funny. It's not funny. And then on the last show, there was a guy who worked for the Manchester Evening News called Ed Glynnett. I can remember his name still. And he said,
"What's this? 20? Almost 30 years later.
Yeah.
Oh my God! I love that you remember his name."
And he said Norman Lovett belonged in the pantheon of all-time comic greats, and he went on to say, no one's got Red Dwarf, but it's really, really good.
Wow.
I was like, wow, that's great. And then we had it recommissioned, possibly thanks to Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Or the agent,
yeah. And then we made series two, and we thought, we kind of know what we're doing
here.
We could get some location stuff in, we've got more of a... slightly more of a budget, and then it kind of properly took off from.
Isn't it amazing the difference between what you know as a writer from series one to two?
Yeah.
And even maybe in the edit of the first series,
absolutely.
You're like, oh God, we wouldn't do that again.
And also what you discover about the characters. We had such a bizarre situation because it was commissioned by BBC Manchester, but everyone lived in London.
Mm-hmm.
So
in BBC London.
In BBC London. So we'd have to catch a coach. We'd have this coach laid on that took us up to Manchester. So we'd rehearse in Acton all week.
Lots of drinking.
Lots of watching movies together. Lots of bonding.
Yeah.
But you weren't really aware of that. And then they would arrive, and then they would basically go out and party like there's...
Yeah.
No tomorrow.
Oh my God. Sounds like good times.
So it was a good times. Yeah.
Can I just ask, going back, were you commissioned to write the script, or did you write it on spec, the very first one?
We wrote it on spec.
Yeah.
We wrote it on spec.
And was that usual back then, to do something on spec?
The way I got into it was I read an article in the Daily Express in late 70s, and it was someone who had written this script on spec, he sent it to ITV, and they'd made it.
Yeah.
And I went to the pub that night with my mates, and I went, I had no idea it was so easy to get stuff on TV. That's why everything's so garbage, because you just write a script, and I reckon if it's probably quite good, it'll go on. Who knew it was that easy? And of course, it isn't.
Yeah.
But that's how it started. And we were doing Spitting Image, and we wanted to do our own thing. Wrote the script, sent one to John Lloyd, copied to John Lloyd, copied to Paul Jackson, who both read it, both liked it, talked about co-producing it, and then neither of them could sell it. Went to BBC London three times. They returned it down three times. Channel 4 wanted to do it as a film on 4.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't want to do it as a film before. We thought it was a sitcom rather than a film, because we wanted to, you know, try and write a new kind of sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And then, purely because there was a hole in Manchester's schedules that they couldn't fill, Paul Jackson happened to be there and said, what do you think of this? Read this. And they went, okay.
Again, another...
just pure being in the right place at the right time.
Oh, that's so good. Paul Jackson, of course, being somewhat of a legend himself in that era.
Well, he was fresh
out of... shows.
Oh, yeah, he was fresh out of doing The Young Ones. Yeah. So he was... He and John Lloyd at the time were absolutely red-hot producers.
Yeah.
And so you thought, if they both like it, there's no way this can't get made.
Yeah.
But no, they couldn't sell it for ages.
So I would say that the show has, I don't know if you feel like this is a fair observation, that the show feels like it's sort of gone back to its roots a bit. There's the obvious reason for saying that it's back in front of, I know this is the second series that it's been back in front of an audience.
We did, the first six series were all in front of an audience.
Yeah.
Series 7 we shot without an audience, but then played it to an audience.
Mm-hmm.
8 was to an audience. And then we did Back to Earth for Dave, which was the first thing we did for Dave. And we couldn't afford an audience or sets. Because...
By the way, he said sets. With a T, not sex. We could
sets.
I know times have got tough, but...
It was 3.
Yeah.
We had about 3 sets.
Wow.
Because they actually really commissioned a clip show. And wanted a clip show with the guys in costume. And, you know, as Robert Llewellyn said, I'm not putting a mask on for 4 hours to go, remember this bit from Maroon?
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, so it was like, what if we're going to get them in the costume, why don't we write a show? And maybe, and then they went, oh, okay, that's a fantastic idea. Will you do it? Okay, do 3. But, of course, the budget was teeny-meeny.
Yeah.
And so it was very, very difficult to do Red Dwarf as we know and love it.
So that's why it was Back to Earth.
So
there weren't special effects and things.
Weren't special well, there were, but they were all mostly for free from an Australian guy called Mike Seymour. And Craig said, hey, I've been talking to the guys at Corrie, and there's probably no reason to do this, but if you want, you can come and film on the Corrie set.
Can't believe a show that was as huge as it was in its heyday, is having to do things ad hoc like that. That is mental.
So it's just sticking all these glue
in
these things.
It's like you've gone back to your student days.
No, it really was. It
was.
And Mike Seymour, the VisFX guy, runs this VisFX University, where he has students teaching him how to do all the various computery things. And I'd met him when I was over there. Looking to try and raise the money for the film. So I called him and said, do you want to be Vis Effects supervisor in this and make me a load of CG sets? And he went, yeah, okay, fine. And in the end, he did 350 shots. And we wound up in American Cinematographer because at that time, no one had shot on 4K red cameras.
That's incredible.
And but it wasn't Red Dwarf.
No.
It was our ticket to get back into the game.
Is that how you saw it?
Yeah.
Really?
Because...
there was a gap, wasn't there, between the last time it was on the BBC and then on Dave. And and by the way, how amazing must you have felt when you'd done this show that you had to scrimp and save and cut corners and not really do what you felt was true Red Dwarf, and then it just rate through the roof. I mean, you like broke records for
They thought the decimal point was in the wrong place when the ratings came in. They thought it was 200,000. It was 2.0.
You know, for people that don't know anything about ratings, which is why should you, but to get, I mean, hardly any digital channels even get to a million, let alone almost three, wasn't it?
They're about, and then there was a massive repeat thing. So I think it was 11 million people watched.
The Dave comeback. That is so cool.
I mean, it's a lot of the same people watching it for five, six times. And maybe even hating it.
But having that culty audience, you get those people that will rewatch stuff. Back. Yeah,
no matter how much
So what was the distance between when it was on BBC and...
there was a big old... it was about 10 years, I think, because that was when we were supposed to be doing the film.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
And that just...
Yeah. The wilderness. So in your head, it had never gone, the show.
Oh, no. I mean,
you were very much still...
I mean, there was a point where we tried so hard with the film and there'd been so many false starts and it looked so often like we're about to make it. But then I'd been messed around big time by a lot of people, including a guy in Australia who claimed he'd been working on a massive Will Smith movie. And he had, what did he have? He pulled out of it and he had 20 million and he was looking to invest it in a movie. And he loved Red Dwarf and he was in Melbourne and I was in Queensland and wondered if we could get together to discuss this because he wanted to. And it was like, oh my God, all my dreams have come true. And he said, look, I'll fly up. I went, great, brilliant. Where shall I stay? Can I stay with you in your flat? And I went, there's some great hotels, great hotels in Surfers Paradise.
You've got 20 million, can afford a hotel.
And he said,
mate.
Okay, yeah, all right, no, fine, I'll stay in a hotel. And he said, who's paying for my plane fare? And I went, kind of, because you've got all the money, kind of thought it would be you. So I then called the producer.
Had the alarm bells wrong this,
I called the producer, said, guy, I'm almost convinced, he said, no, but just, talk to him. So he called him, and then he called me back, and he said he claims to be, he's got 100 million altogether, he claims to be the Duke of Manchester, and he's got all his money from nobility. And I just went, that's just garbage. I'm from Manchester, there's no such thing as the Duke of Manchester, just, oh God, yeah, okay, of course, yeah. So anyway, I called the office and said, thanks for the great, letting this lunatic have my number. I know there's no Duke of Manchester, just make sure there isn't a Duke of Manchester. So they called back and said, actually, Doug, there is a Duke of Manchester, and he moved to Melbourne back in 1937 or something. I was like, oh, shit.
You said anything to him?
No. But, okay, but you're suddenly like, it's eccentric. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And you just wanted to stay and be your bud, and you're going and you've been there.
And you've been a distrusting, paranoid.
What's wrong? So anyway, we called him back and said, look, we just need a bit of proof to prove that you are the Duke of Manchester and you've got all this money. And he went, well, look, I'm great friends with Kate Blanchett. Why not I give you Kate's number? And then you can talk to Kate. Kate will vouch for me and everything will be cool. So the producer called Kate Blanchett her number. It was engaged, curiously. And then 5 minutes later, he got through, and a lady answered the phone holding a nose, saying, I'm terribly sorry, I've got a terrible cold at the moment, pretending to be Kate Blanchett.
The story is, are you making this
up? No, it's from it. So anyway, he went, still wasting my time, bang, put the phone down. Nothing happened for about 4 or 5 days, and then the Duke called 4 or 5 days later. And said, how do you get on with Kate? And the producer went, just go away, stop annoying us. We know you're a fake, go away, leave us alone. And he went, that really was Kate. She was really hurt. She really did have a cold. And I'll prove to you I've got 100 million. How do you want me to do it? And he said, send me a bank statement with 100 million in it to prove it. And he went, okay, give me your fax number. And then half an hour later, this fax came through with 100 million in it. But what he'd done was he'd just tippexed out what was really in there and then typed over 100 million.
Oh my God. an actually mentally ill person.
Apparently, he used to do this kind of thing quite a lot with bands going, you know.
So he could hang out with them?
Yeah, and yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The fact that he said, you went, prove that you're the Duke of Manchester, and he didn't have, like, documents Google Duke of... He went, cool, Kate...
Yeah, Kate but what's interesting is how much you want to believe him.
Yeah, of course.
You so want to give him the benefit of the doubt, and you see all sorts of...
There's a lesson for all young filmmakers.
Yeah, there is.
Be wary of Dukes. I remember seeing pictures and going on the website and seeing you all doing makeup tests and things for the film. I mean, it obviously got quite close to...
We had read-throughs, we did storyboards, we had makeup tests, and the money was coming in. There was investment money there.
This wasn't the Duke, this was a different...
No, this was like real
this was real
money.
Someone.
And I was sent to Australia to basically scout out the locations and redo the budget, and then the money was going to come in, and then... It didn't.
I mean, it's so heartbreaking, isn't it? Because what do you know, you want to believe it, you put all that work in, and then what happens when it doesn't happen? Like, do you have to... I know this is a really boring question, but, like, it must have cost money to make all the costumes and stuff.
Oh, yeah, it cost a lot of money. I mean...
Would you claim insurance or something?
No, that's just tough.
Really?
Yeah, that's tough. That's just money down the drain.
Doug, do you need me to lend you some cash? I mean, wow.
It was very annoying.
So, in all those years, in the wilderness years, you were just thinking of the film. Were you ever having conversations with the BBC? I mean, why the fuck didn't the BBC stump up some cash for a film?
Well, that's interesting, because we went back to... originally, the BBC said, I think the TV rights, we wanted $1 million for the TV rights, which is kind of like a normal average sort of deal, which would have obviously gone into the thing. And they went, yeah, fine. And then we went back and said, can we have $1 million for the TV rights? And we went, no, things have changed now. We're not buying individual films. They've got to come in packages. And it was like, oh, so you're not in for the film then? No. Oh, okay. What about TV series? We could maybe do another TV series. Are you in for that? And then they had a little committee, and then they said they were no longer interested in the audience that Red Dwarf formerly used to attract, unquote.
That's bizarre for two reasons. One, that they're not interested in that audience.
No.
Like, so that audience, we'd actually rather you don't watch our TV station. Secondly, that audience, because I was going to ask you about this, that audience are what makes Hollywood live and breathe right now. Like the comic book, the Comic Con world. Was that stuff there when you guys first started out?
No. God, science fiction was like this really...
Yeah, it's like the kid in the bedroom.
Oh, my God. You go in. When we went in, we had a meeting with the head of comedy. I went, science fiction comedy. You know, this is a whole genre that's not really been exploited. Yeah. And he went, what about Hitchhiker's Guide? Yeah, absolutely. And look how successful Hitchhiker's Guide is. And we went, look at Star Wars. These films are massive. They went, our friends across the pond. We went, well, yeah. And there's a real... opportunity here to do a more character-based comedy than Hitchhikers, brilliant though that was, a sort of Steptoe and Sunny in Space. And he went, okay. And then he got it, but wouldn't commission Red Dwarf, which we'd written. He said, okay, I'll commission you to do something else.
Weirdo.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the early... I love every sort of weird incarnation it became. You know, it feels like it's gone through a...
Sure.
You know, the early years the Steptoe and Son sort of year, and then it became probably what we now know of it. I had I was writing a show with another comedy writer performer, and we had a long conversation about sort of a heated debate about whether you can have very story heavy comedies, whether the story gets in the way of jokes and things.
Yeah, yeah.
And your show is an absolute perfect shining example of that you can. I mean, there aren't that many, but the fact that you had so many concepts, twists and turns, and yet a billion gags as well, like proper gags. Yeah. You know, it's there aren't that many shows that have cracked that.
No, it's interesting. I mean, we were told at the beginning to avoid science fiction in our science fiction comedy because people didn't like science fiction. And we went, okay, All right. Okay. Does this mean if it means we'll get it commissioned? Oh, right. Fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll make a note of that.
And how do you do that? How do you hide the science fiction?
And
in
so
a
you
science-
go. It's going to be like Steptoe and Son in Space. Oh, yeah. Okay. Except you'll do this thing with Future Echoes in Show 2 where they'll have this weird conversation that won't make any sense, and then they'll go around in a circle and come back and it'll all make... So we just ignored it but lied and basically said that's
well
what it's going to be.
An example of when lying is
lying
good.
Lying is good.
What was the film going to be? What was story were you... I read one of the books. This is how... I was...
Okay.
What was the book that...
The first one was called Infinity Welcome to Careful
It was
Drivers.
The one that
Better
sort of
life.
Back to reality was sort of similar to... Back to life.
Better than life, with the 2 feet on the cover.
Which, by the way... You know, obviously, virtual reality is becoming
and
it's going to be big soon.
It's going to be really big.
Do you think people are going to, you know, we're in danger of what happens in the book? Because people are starting, they forget to eat and
exactly.
piss themselves. And
I mean, that's the thing. If virtual reality becomes better than real reality for people, that's going to be...
They're going to die with a headset on.
They're going to stay in there, aren't they?
Of course. I mean, it's such a brilliant concept.
Yeah.
And I think, didn't you? You won a shitload of awards for that episode back to. Did you?
No, we didn't.
No. In my mind, you did. In my bedroom, I presented you with awards just because I was so blown away by it. But how do you do that? How do you write something that has. Like, what's your process? Do you think of stories first and then just the gags come as you're writing it? Or. Because they're pretty. I mean,
back in the day when I used to write it with Rob, I mean, we'd sit in a room and just talk. And then they would come out in a variety of different, oh, why don't we do this? Oh, that's a good character idea. That's a cool science fiction. And I used to have a book and I'd write all the ideas down. And I have like 300 ideas.
And when you say talk and have ideas, you mean about like concepts and...
It'll be concepts. Say they met a load of waxworks. And something happened. Oh, okay, waxworks, boom, idea. Yeah. And we, without really exploring them, we'd just write the list, or I'd write the list, and be, you know, 300, 400. And then it was like, okay, now let's decide on a show, and then we go back down the list, and then boom, 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 and then one where we go, oh, no, we both really like that, we think there's something in that, and then we discuss it and explore it more.
And then the comedy element, like the sort of more interplay between the characters, just came when you started writing?
That would come... Yeah, that would come as we wrote it.
Yeah. I don't think the BBC quite realised that they were getting 2 for the price of 1 back then. Like, comedy writers and science fiction writers. Like, now, because high concept stuff's such a big industry.
And it wasn't back then.
No.
No.
They didn't know. And so, remind me at the time what the sort of figures were back then. Like the peak ones?
Oh, our biggest was at the end of Series 8, and we got 8 million on BBC Two.
That's so cool.
Which I think is still the biggest for a comedy on BBC Two.
So what else do you do when you're not red dwarfing? Or is that
mostly
your life?
No. I've written 12. We've recorded series 11 and series 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written all 12 of those and directed them. So that's taken up a massive chunk of the last God knows how long. Before that, I did a pilot for BBC One with Hugh Dennis and a few other projects in the works. But I put them all on hold to do Red Dwarf 11 and 12, yeah.
And do you still have the same passion and...
I don't think you could write it unless you did, especially because it is such a commitment.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you've got to be enthusiastic and you've got to genuinely want to do it, or else, God, you can't.
Did you ever fall out of love with it? Did you ever
never.
Really?
Never. No, I've always...
That's cool.
Yeah, I've always really liked it. I mean, there'll be things you go, oh, I regret we did that in that way, or can we fix that? But not, I'm just sick to the back teeth of it.
Yeah.
No.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, how amazing it must be to have something that you've I know this is a very odd comparison, but I remember watching an interview with Sylvester Stallone, and I see you two in very similar.
Look just like him.
You look just like him. No, and he said, he, you know, obviously Rocky is the thing he'll be remembered for forever. He went through a phase of hating that that was what people always referenced.
Right.
And he so desperately went. And then he came back round after, I don't know, like 10 years or something, going, hang on. To create anything that has as long an a life as this, and that people love that much, is amazing.
Yeah, you know? I mean, the thing about Rocky, there is a sort of, until maybe Creed, but there is a formula too.
Yeah.
It's the underdog fight, it's the boom, 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 and then someone wins at the end. With Red Dwarf, any idea you can fit into that.
Yeah.
So
that's what's so great
about it. So it's an open-ended thing, so you can always turn those characters into, you know.
Do you? Can I talk about the fact that it used to be written by the two of you, and then you know what happened there? Was there ever a point when, from what I understand, Rob just decided he was, you know,
we never actually had cross words at all. Did the first six series, and then to be fair, he wanted to leave before series one had been recorded.
Really?
Yeah, which was...
He just didn't like
mad.
Being involved in good things.
He just wanted to go his own way.
Yeah.
And we'd rehearsed all six shows, but the electrician strike had knocked it out.
The famous electrician strike of 1986.
Six, yes, that one. And so we had an opportunity to rewrite the scripts based on what we'd learned in all those rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't really want to do that. He wanted to... just discuss why we shouldn't write together anymore, and then I know it was just so frustrating and so mental. So that was the first one, and then the second one was, I can't remember what series it was, about three or four, and then I got an opportunity to produce Spitting Image, and I called him and went, I'll take it if you don't want to come back and write, and he said, okay, I'll come back. Not that he'd really gone anywhere.
Yeah.
He just stayed.
But it was always looming, this possibility.
And then we were doing a series called The Ten Percenters.
I remember that.
And he didn't want to write with me, fully didn't want to write with me. So I wrote three, and then he wrote three, and his three, they wanted to rewrite. The director wanted him to rewrite them, and shortly after that he left.
So it sounds to me like he just didn't enjoy writing, maybe?
I don't know. What was good about that was my agent at the time said, I'll sort it out.
Yeah.
I went, okay, I'll come in with you to talk to Rob. And he went, no, leave it to me, I'll sort it out. So he went in, came out, and said, right, fine, I've sorted it out. Brilliant, what happened? He said, Rob's left. I went, okay. who's writing these other three shows then? There were four shows, actually, it was four shows. And he went, you are. And I went, but we've got, that means I've got to write a show a week for the next 4 weeks. But yeah, you'll do it.
You said you'd sort it out. Yeah, this wasn't the kind of sort it out I was hoping for.
That was him sorting it out.
Wow.
And I just moved house, and we got all these, they were like IKEA bookshelves.
Mm.
And I had a lot of videos and DVDs, videos I think it was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had 12 of these flat packs in my, it was just a room. It wasn't an office, it was a room. And every time I couldn't get an idea, I would build a flat pack bookcase. But very shortly, I had 12 of these things, which we couldn't get out of the room because I just built without thinking about that. But hey.
So that means you 12 times couldn't come up with an idea.
You're
giving away too much.
I know. I hit those bookshelves with hammers and stuff. And so we had to learn.
And then, was there ever a point where that it was considered the show may not go on?
No, because the boys wanted to do it. Rob agreed not to be involved in it, and then we made a series seven. But that was a kind of interesting situation because I wanted to write all series seven myself,
mm-hmm.
but having not written a series myself, it was difficult to go, hey, I tell you what, why don't I just write all of them?
Because
I was worried, like, God, they'll think this guy's ego's, the size of Guatemala. I can't do that. And so then you realize you've actually lost control of the thing,
mm-hmm.
In a really quite fundamental way. And it's taken a little while to fully get that back. And I think now with 11 and 12, it's...
It definitely feels to me like there
that's,
is...
That's why it is like that. Because, originally with Dave, with Back to Earth, it wasn't 30 minutes. You can't tell stories in 22 minutes, in a Red Wolf story at least. Yeah. You know, so you need
those extra six.
You need those. And that's what Gordon Simpson used to say about the Steppes. It makes a massive difference to have those 6-7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we didn't have any location filming, and that makes all the difference. And we only had a couple of sets to start with, whereas back in the day we had those all stored and you just bring them out.
Yeah.
Whereas they all wound up in the skip.
So the first couple of recordings, that must have been a buzz. Must have loved.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's always been a buzz about Red Rose, to be honest. When we advertised tickets for Back to Earth, they crashed the site, internet site, that they were on, and they'd all gone within, I think, 30 seconds or something. Absolutely nuts.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's good. It's, you know, it gives me a warm feeling knowing that the love is out there.
There is.
I mean, you've created something that is genuinely in the, I think, in the history books in a way. And you've created, we were just talking before we went on air about how you've created even, like, what was the thing you were telling me? That there's a list, there was a list of swear words published in the...
Oh, there was a list of swear words published. It was in the Independent. I only glanced through it, yeah.
They were rating
swear words.
The severity of swear words. Yes. And we were like, well, you invented a swear word, Smeg, that people actually use.
It didn't make it.
But that's quite, that must
charts,
be quite cool. Was there a time...
It's not my proudest achievement,
though. Is it?
It's not, no.
I think it is, secretly. I think, but more than all those amazing, cleverly written storylines, it's the one... No.
Yeah.
You must have heard people... Have you ever had a situation where you're in a shop or something and you overhear people talking about the show? Because they don't recognise you.
I had that. And I was in a Woolworths once. And there was quite a long queue, and I was looking for some barbecue equipment, and I rather cheekily just caught this guy's eye and said, "Where's the barbecue equipment?" expecting him to point. And he jumped over the thing, left the queue of probably 15 people, and went, "It's this way." And then we went down around all these aisles, and he went, "There they are." And I went, "Oh my God, thanks." And then he went, "Oh, by the way, Doug, when's the Red Dwarf film happening?"
Oh, there you go. So you never thought that your show would help you get to a barbecue quicker. Now, we often ask our guests to pick a guilty pleasure film or TV show, just to, you know, it's a fun thing to do to see if there's something that they... it sort of falls into two categories. Either a show that they know is terrible, or a film they know is bad, but they love, or something that they think is misunderstood is actually a piece of... you know, art. You've picked something I think probably falls into the former of those
art,
two.
Art, isn't it?
Okay. Which is a film I always remember when I was a bit younger, like everyone always saying is considered one of the worst movies ever made. What is the film? Why don't you tell everyone
it's
what you've...
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yeah. And it's your guilty pleasure because...
Because it doesn't work. Because tomatoes don't
can't kill.
And there's no... They need mouths or something, don't they, to kill people?
Oh, come
they
on. Just, you write science fiction. How just, dare you be so logical
they
about...
They just roll on them a bit.
Yeah.
And the tomatoes don't look that tomato-y.
That's true.
So, yeah,
I
did.
But you enjoyed it, though.
I enjoyed... I was jealous of it, thinking, God, I wish I'd thought of that. We would have used it.
Yeah, that's... I could imagine that in there. I've got a feeling, and maybe... I'll have to look... I haven't got... the facilities right now to look it up immediately, but I've got a feeling George Clooney was in a sequel to one of those films. Return of the Killer.
Oh.
Yeah, in his early...
Oh, right.
Because he was... When he became a star, it was... One of his sort of stories was that he had done so much bad TV and films.
Right.
I'm sure he was in, like, the fourth sequel to a Killer Tomato movie.
Right, because Jack Nicholson did a lot of those Roger Corman B-movie things.
Right, yeah.
He? So
Easy Rider.
Easy Rider. Yeah.
Well, I think that definitely is a guilty pleasure. and if people listening want to check it out, go for it. I mean, it's probably due a remake, isn't it?
It probably is, yeah.
So you've got, the show is currently airing. The third episode went out last night, and you've got so that's three more, and it's doing really well.
It's doing fantastically. Brilliant. And the response has been absolutely amazing.
Excellent.
There are a few people think there's a paradox, by the way, in last night's show. I just wanted to say those weren't Lister's kidneys in the jar. Okay.
Okay.
So there was no paradox. But anyway, so
for those people that were didn't sleep last night,
we've had some fantastic reviews in the Old Gold, but there's a paradox.
Okay,
it's like no, there isn't.
No, good. We've had that. It's been on everyone's lips. You can. And did you say you've already filmed the 12th?
We did 12 off the bat.
12 episodes,
all in one big. We had Christmas off. And then just kept going. So,
I mean, from a employment point of view, that must have been nice.
I didn't think of it actually at the time. Like, oh, this is so nice.
No,
as I was sitting there at Christmas, having a turkey, going, "You shall be working. What are you doing?" No, it was great fun. The audiences were great. The guys, we had such a laugh.
I bet.
And
oh, hang on. I wanted to ask you this as well, just before we go in. Mm. I'm remembering an interview hearing that Craig and Chris.
Yeah.
It's only been recently, or in the last 5 years, that they've actually been, that they had a bit of a slightly awkward friendship.
Because they are so different fundamentally.
So this is true, though.
And so, right in the first series, there was a little bit of, you know. It takes time for people to, you know, get on and trust one another and all that. And they were coming. And Craig, you know, would be the first to admit, he was Mr., you know, party boy.
Yeah.
And Chris was, you know, extremely diligent and professional. And mm-hmm. then you got Craig coming with some gigantic hangover. Yeah.
So, but what I love is that, you know, just completely adds just, to the characters.
Exactly. We're there going, gimme, gimme. This is great. You know, we'll write this in.
That's great.
Yeah.
But now they love each other.
Now everyone loves one another. Yeah,
good. I think you can tell.
It's a great. Yeah, I think that comes across. I think you're right.
Doug, it's been such a pleasure. I could have chatted to you for years and
years. It's been lovely to talk to you, Dan.
And good luck with the rest of the show.
Thank you very much.
When does Series 12 go out?
Series 12 goes out probably September 2017.
Okay. Okay.
Another six.
That's weird, isn't it? Knowing it's made
and it's on the shelf. Yeah. I know, that's so weird.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. And we're going to play out with the theme tune, because what a wonderful song. You must have been. Is my memory right in saying that there wasn't this theme tune for the first couple of series?
No, it was there right from the beginning.
Howard
Goodall wrote it.
But at the end, the beginning credits was the
there was that. Yes, sorry, you're right. So that this
don't try and correct me. You may have created and written and you know
right.
this made the show for 30 years.
I thought you were talking about the bat one. Yeah, the that was series three. You're right.
Which also added in those early series to that slightly lonely, dark sort of vibe
it had.
But it's a great. You must have been well chuffed when you. When you heard this.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fantastic.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Doug.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good talking to you then. Cheers.
This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.